or on this program, but we knew that we really needed to find someone special to come, and we, you know, a number of names were proposed and didn't quite seem right, and then almost as if on order, appearing out of the night from up north in Wisconsin, reappearing on the local scene for the first time in 15 years, one of the finest poets to emerge from these river cities, East St. Louis's Eugene Redmond, returned to the St. Louis area and was available and ready. And so we were ready because we've been, over the years, always trying to get Eugene to read at Duff's, and he's always been somewhere else when it was happening. But now he's here, and we're here, and have ears pricked. Eugene Redmond is one of the great authorities on the origins and roots of both black poetry and poetry itself. His books include a foundation study of black poetry in America called Drum Voices, which is a real classic of its type and a valuable resource book. His volumes of poetry include such books as River of Bone and Flesh and Tears, if I've got that title right, Blood, River of Bones and Flesh and Blood, and In a Time of Rain and Desire. In a time of intensifying heat, here's Eugene Redmond.
Thank you, Mike, and a salute to you and Gregory Mills. What I like to do is continue to link in to all this spiritual warmth and food that we've been sharing and that's being grown here tonight and being generated. It's about continuities and fluidities and confluences, that is poetry and life and art. It's about all those things. And I thought I might begin by reading a poem. Generally read one poem from each of my five published books of poetry. In particular, a poem that reflects on something that on an internal agony that America has been experiencing for some time, and that is the Vietnam conflict. And some said it was resolved the other day when we had the 10th year anniversary celebration or you know, observance of 10-year observance of the departure, some would say defeat, of the United States in Vietnam. I was in Southeast Asia and had returned when in 1969 a young lieutenant named Collie was on a mission in South Vietnam. He was supposed to have found Viet Cong in a village. There were no Viet Cong, but somehow the bodies of slightly under 400 men, women, and children, lots of older women and pregnant women, were found lifeless in an earthen grave. So I reflected on my own experiences, general experiences, the struggle, including all of its variables and its variants, in a poem called Barbecued Kong, or We Laid Me Lie Low. That village that Collie entered was called Me Lai. Some say My Lai. I say Me Lai. And hence the title, Barbecued Kong, or We Laid Me Lie Low. At Me Lai, we left lent for lawns, feathered with frameless, wingless birds, barbecued and bodiless heads of hair hanging from the charcoal gazes of burnt huts, Rice-thin hides harbored flesh-flailing pellets, unregenerative crops trigger-grown from the trunks of branchless mechanical trees. As barbecue grills grew hotter with ghost-hot heat, mothers cooked children and causes in the grease of blood-glazed breasts, resigned in the weighty whisper that one can only die once. Cannon cut me lie into fleshy confetti, pellet-potted half-cooked carcasses curing in rice wine. Rat-tat-tat of an idea, souvenirs for patron saints presiding over oil wells, flat face down in the mud like some unclaimed, unnamed, yet undreamt dream, while miniature machine gun mines mate with mole holes on the muddy highways of swamp or swampless night. Westward whore, hear ye, a declaration of undeclared causes, a preamble to constipation and conscription. Dare we overcome, even arrive, slightly begin, entertain thoughts, go forth against morning before grains unfold. My land may lie. Puppet shows and portable pentagods soar or sneak from Saigon. Shine came on deck of the mine this morning and said, there's a sag in the nation's middle. Which way extends the natal cord, north or south? I lay down my life for Mila and Harlem. I lay down my burden in Timbuktu and Baltimore. We waited long and low for Mila, like low-strung studs, when we reared and rammed her with spark sperm-spitting penises, then withdrew westward 6,000 miles, a Pacific coffin of the mind between us, to vex canned good consciences and claim the Fifth Amendment. That was my, from my first book of poems, Slim Volume of Verse, as the poets are wont to say, after the publication of which my sisters wanted to know, before the publication of which my sisters wanted to know, when are you going to publish a book? After the publication of which they wanted to know, when are you going to publish a real book? So I said, what is a real book? They said, you know, the kind that we can read the title of along the side. So I said, okay, I'll publish a real book. Anyway, then I published a real book. My second volume, Slim Volume of Verse, River of Bones and Flesh and Blood. And I like to read from this volume a tribute to my father, John Henry Redmond Sr., called Epigram for My Father, heavily influenced by the numerous traditions out of which I write, and at whose feet I studied. And I'm thinking now of Carter Rivard over there, who looks at least as young as I do. my mentor of 20 years ago, because a continuing hovering spirit, of course. I was just thinking now, back home now after 15 years of moving around, that I was at Southern Illinois University and I had Stella Rivard, and then I said, boy, whew, God, I survived the Rivard, and then went to Washington U and ran into Carter Rivard. So anyway, telling demanding scholars, part of what I'm about. Epigram for my father. Father Lore. Papa writes, Daddy Hood, run and trap song, search and dodge song, steel hammering man, gun bowder, whiskey warrior, night god, moon baller, brawler grown old, slaughterhouse river mac man, high tail teller and totem pole man, wanderer across waters, rail raging, rail splitter, rail rage, I see, and BMNO, and Mopac, And midnight special freight train, bring my daddy back. Stone story, the story of stone, broken bricks, rocks hurled in pleasure and rage, pebbles soft and silent. Home dome is a blue hardhead. 45-degree hat, Bull Durham butt billing from lips. The Aberdeen shining above white silk socks. Satin man, yes, satin man. Silk sure and steel strong. Silk sure, steel strong. Hammer hole on life. Hammer hole on life. Sun, stone bone, black blitz. Father law, struggle deep. Afri dark, Afro lock. Daddy death, river bottom song. And, excuse me. Thank you. A contrast between the Midwest and California, or the Midwest and the West. A poem called Lone Song. After I had just completed my first solo flight, that is, my first extended visit at another university as a teacher myself, after coming through the moving through the fire here, not only the fire, academic fire, but the fire of the streets. We were very much involved in what the goings on of the 60s. And I left here and went to Oberlin College in Ohio as writer in residence. And that was really astounding to me, because surprising, because I hadn't published a book. You know, I went to writer in residence. But I had some things in manuscript, and the students were interested. And it was fascinating, because there were three committees, and they were interviewing writers. They flew in about 50 writers, and they were looking for their first black writer in residence. The Oberlin, founded in 1834, was one of the first colleges in the United States to admit women and black people. So it was history rich. And I had read about Oberlin. I'd done research into, you know, the Underground Railroad and the abolitionist movement as part of my preparation for being presumably an intelligent American. And I knew about Oakland, and I was very excited about the prospect of going there. And when I was selected, I was surprised, as I said, because I hadn't published a book. But there were three committees, one made up of a cross section of those who peopled the campus in any kind of way. One came from the English department, and one was made up of students. And I think there was a tie between another writer and myself, and the students kind of liked the heat and fire that I brought out of the Midwest. I mean, you know, they were things that would I guess in other circumstances, under other circumstances, would have worked against me, worked in my favor, including a disastrously negative recommendation from a former professor. But the students thought that made me hip, see, you know, so. He said that I had given up, great promise and potential, and had taken to the streets, and I was running around with hoodlums and using words like revolution and stuff like that. Really, I mean, anyway, Lone Song. When I got to California, I escaped to California from Oberlin, and the Underground Railroad in Oberlin, you know, escaped to California. And so I'm reflecting now in California in Lone Song. On some differences. First fears, first tears on autumn window panes, leftover hurt from summer, the dregs of Illinois madness. California song is subtle sting. California chill is quiet, catwalk, not noisy and nervous like Midwestern winters. My mood then often comes is drummed hummed by mail. My fury, my flame, my fidget caught postcard quick, caught and cornered, bulletin boarded, shored upon salt-filled tomorrows. Brother, sister, nephew, niece, vital vibes on wire, on lyre, kin cords, blood cords of sounds or strings, spontaneous combustion of blood inside trees, inside seas and shells, inside xylophones, telephones, and saxophones. And yet another slimmer volume of verse. And this has had some wear and tear. Published Quaderno di Poesia in Rome by Centro Studi Scambi Internazionali. That's the only Italian I know. Consider loneliness as these things, the title poem. Consider loneliness as a lull, as some secret space that jails the mind, as a circumstantial melody, colon, the blues of wretchedness or the blues of joy, as some totem of penitence or pity or pride sagging from the neck like a lead medallion or a dead bird, spinning out wire threads or hard feathers of confinement, as a hypnotist, eye blind with psychic sight and strength to unleash the lances of unexpurgated pain, of unquelled thought quakes or Watusi tall dreams. Consider loneliness as these things. Consider loneliness as a weaver of want, as a giver of needs undefined, as some ancestral repository for a personal mythic tablet, as a nerve nourished over gently or laced with worry, as a womb wailing out its liquid wasps, its tight lips waiting, as a tyrant, timeless and tough. Consider loneliness. There's one of the humorous poem I like to read from this, I know my grandmother would is turning over in her grave. I had a very strict religious upbringing, First Baptist, and then my grandma, and under my grandmother's supervision, Seventh Day Adventist. And you read sections of the Bible before you chopped wood or shoveled snow. I mean, you did. You know, the Seventh Day Adventists have it mapped out so that you complete a reading of the Bible every year. Well, what we did it one time and we faked the other years. But I mean, you literally, you know, you read so much, and at New Year's Eve, you have completed the Bible, and presumably you do this every year for the rest of your life. Well, as I said, we faked that, but this is called The Second Coming. Fire, fire, where, oh, where will you be when flames go on that global spree? When Earth's crotch and crop catch fire and other planets won't piss on the pyre. But wait for echoes from that ashen urn. Oh, didn't it burn? Oh, my Lord, didn't it burn? When a sleazy planet shaken from a nap asks, burn, burn. Oh, my dear, has Earth got to clap? Anyway, so much for that. A little fun. And I'm influenced by a number of people. This combines two of my major influences, Shakespeare and Smokey Bill Robinson. I can never unlove you. To not want is to not exist, is to be deminded, is to be disembodied, is to be disimpersoned and float like an apparition into the nowhere, into the gray whim of limbo. And that is why I can never unlove you, why I can never dismantle my passion, why I can never decompose my desire to reel in my cautious need.